Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
And welcome in. Happy Monday, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. It is Jaguars Today on the scene. Week three of OTAs here at Everbank. Tony, how many of these OTA practices will they get in this week? I think today will be fine.
Today will be fine. Tomorrow's pushing it, unless they wanted to go to the afternoon. Apparently, it's supposed to blow out of here, at least some of the effects that we're going to be getting from the tropical storm by the mid-afternoon tomorrow. So if they wanted to push back practice, maybe. And then Wednesday they're off. Thursday should be fine. Friday should be fine.
Right. The rest of the week should be fine after that point in time. Tropical Storm Colin. My son is quite proud of the fact that the storm is now his namesake. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't do too much damage. He doesn't do too much damage, so it should be okay. Let's hope that's the case. But just a lot of rain. Just be careful on the roads out there. Jags on the practice field this week. John Osier going to join us coming up in less than 10 minutes from Jaguars.com. And Hayes Carline is going to stop in today. First time we've had him in a while from the Florida Times Union to give us his thoughts on how things have gone for the first couple of weeks with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take a look at that Pro Football Focus ranking a little bit later on. But you and I are sitting here. We could come up with several guys I think that we would put in the top five ahead of some of the ones they have on the list. We've done this question before on the program as our question of the day, and typically you know, you're going to get a lot of love for Blake, Allen Hurns, Brandon Linder, Telvin Smith. If he were healthy, I think Derek Marks might even get some credit on this list, and you can point to a lot of potential guys. Tashawn Gibson is another one, not in the potential category, but maybe in the actual category, at least from what he's shown at times in his NFL career. He's played at a pretty high level. You know, last year wasn't as good as the year before.
Yeah, we'll get in depth into it here in about an hour. But looking at the five players they pointed out as the top five players on the roster, I think it is notable that a 5-11 football team, that four of those five are free agent acquisitions this year. That's what Pro Football Focus felt about the roster last year. And despite how good a year Blake Bortles had, if you looked at the numbers from Pro Football Focus week to week, they weren't very good on their grading scale, and they are committed to that number. Whatever it happens to be for these players, that's why they have their site. That's why they've set it up the way they have. They have this number that they assign players on a play and game basis, and then they give them a season-long number, and they're committed to it. That is their grade of that particular player, and there's no room for feel in that grade, and that's when these kind of lists come out. It reflects that. They are committed to whatever number they have on a player.
Right, and look, as we said, garbage in, garbage out. I'm not saying this is garbage going in, but if the number doesn't accurately reflect the quality of the player, then you're not going to get an accurate reflection of the quality of the roster. And that's just the way it is. But they try to boil everything down into basically one statistic that encompasses everything. Everyone's trying to do it. Everyone's trying to find the ultimate statistic in every sport, whether it's wins above replacement or whatever, that can fairly judge one player versus another, even across positions, and it's sometimes even across sports. But, you know, look, there's never going to be a perfect solution to all this. But the eyeball test is not perfect either. I hear, oh, the eyeball test, the eyeball test, the eyeball test. Sometimes there's got to be a combination, I think, of the analytics and the instinct and the experienced set of eyes watching that has watched a lot of football and says, hey, look, I can see these guys. Player A is better than player B, period. Don't tell me what your numbers tell me.
Well, and look, the oldest adage in football, at least since this has been around, to watch coaches' tape has been the eye in the sky never lies. And that's not about eyeball tests. That's about this is physically what we saw them do. And what Pro Football Focus is trying to do, basically, is grade it. Is take that tape and grade it the way that coaches have been grading these things forever in the National Football League. They're trying to give some kind of insight into what they think the grade for these players should be. Whether they're right or wrong is up for debate. That's part of it. Football is always trying to find that next thing to give you an edge. I don't know if analytics is going to be that in the end. I think to some degree it already has been with the way some teams use it and have found ways to make it work for them. But it's going to be debatable every time they put one of these out. Do I really think the Jacksonville Jaguars roster is seven spots worse than Tennessee? Hell no.
No.
I don't, but that's what Pro Football Focus said today.
And again, in the end, none of it matters. Maybe this will be an accurate reflection of how good they are this year. Let's hope that's not the case, or they're stuck right back where they've been as a bottom feeder in the National Football League like they've been for the last several years now. But regardless, we're not going to dwell too heavily on that today. One of the things we will talk about today a little bit is going back to the inaugural season. Today, not only is it Prince Amukamara's birthday, it's Randy Jordan's birthday, scorer of the first regular season touchdown in Jacksonville Jaguar history. And so we thought we'd take a look back at that season through the eyes of you, the fans out there, and ask you what's your favorite memory from the inaugural season, 1995, for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can share your thoughts with us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, the Jaguars Today Facebook page, certainly available as well. 641-1010 is the phone number if you'd like to call in throughout the course of the next 2 hours, and it's also what serves as the text line number driven by Duval Ford. Want to say a big thanks to former Bartram Trail Athletic Director Barry Craig, hosted me out at the Ponte Vedra Inn and Club last Friday. We played with his good buddy Mike Hurd. Those guys were a blast and great company. So you want to talk about a spectacular golf course that they, and I honestly cannot recall if I've ever played it before, Tony, but we played the Lagoon course out there on Friday afternoon, and it was just absolutely impeccable. So I appreciate those guys, and it's fun making these connections across the First Coast with the listener base. So there you have that. Coming up next, John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com, to get us rolling on this Monday. Week 3 of OTAs is underway, and so is Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, Johnny O is in the studio with us here at Everbank, the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, starting week 3 of OTA coverage for your Jacksonville Jaguars here on Jaguars Today. And John joins us from Jaguars.com. What's up? How are you?
You know what O knows today?
What do you know?
O knows, and not much, but O knows that 3 weeks of OTAs is at least one too many.
Is that right?
At least
one too many in terms of coming up with new storylines? Or at least, because I would assume.
Oh, don't know that.
I would assume that the coaches think that, they'd probably have 5 weeks of OTAs if they could.
I guess they do.
You know, they probably feel like installing the offense and things like that are probably significant things that they try to get accomplished.
And for that, having the time to have repetitions on the field, that's great for them. For us.
That's great for them.
No, it's.
Play amongst yourselves.
It's really something that. Probably, is definitely, if you're trying to do 4 weeks of coverage on this and then doing 4 more weeks of preseason coverage, you know how to, you're probably doing a little too much.
Well,
which is fine. It's what we do.
As you know,
it's something to talk about.
Like you, we do 52 weeks
Absolutely.
Of coverage on this.
Right.
So when there's actually something going on in the
wrong
field,
right.
You know what? It's better than the alternative.
No, I'm not sitting here complaining about doing that. It's just 4 weeks of OTAs.
I hear what you're saying.
You're trying to come up with new storylines.
Right, you want new storylines,
right.
and pretty much the storyline is just the same as it's been.
Sure.
It's beginning. You're getting the new guys acclimated to the way you do things, learning the offense, trying to build some chemistry,
right.
Trying out some different combinations of players, not only on the offensive line, but many position groups.
Right.
It's that time of
some
year to do those kind of things.
To feel good about for the Jaguars, I haven't talked to coaches specifically, but I'm sure they feel good. Dante Fowler is participating in everything, and so is Marquise Lee. Those are guys, considering their history, considering coming back from injury, that you weren't sure on. I'm sure they were sure, but it's good to see them participating. 2 weeks ago, those guys were storylines because of their health, because of their history or whatever. And it was sort of say you'd like to see them participating and doing it all. Well, they are. So those are good signs for that. I think Alan Hearns, beyond the contract extension, the fact that he's out there, it shouldn't surprise anybody considering how tough he is. This guy's coming off sports hernia surgery and participating, I don't want to say 100%, because he's doing that thing where Gus talks about where they're doing 2 reps a series instead of 4 or whatever. But he's out there. So – not surprising considering his history, but some guys who are participating that it's good to see.
In terms of Fowler, we've heard from multiple sources that, boy, does he look athletic. He looks the part, right,
yes.
As an athlete. Have you noticed that as he stood out among great athletes?
Well, and all the reports, I didn't watch him a whole lot at Florida. People I know who watched him at Florida said he was violent, sudden, all the athletic things that you want. It would have been concerning if you didn't see that. In the shorts practices, you're certainly seeing his athleticism as advertised, but that's what you're supposed to see when you're the best defensive player in your draft and maybe the best player in your draft, considering two quarterbacks went ahead of him. So, I mean, when you make an argument with the guy, when you're picked that high, you expect elite athletic ability. The good news is nobody's talking about, yeah, he's favoring it this way. You could tell he's a little hesitant. So far, he doesn't look hesitant. If this is hesitant, it's a good sign.
We know that you can only say so much about what you do or don't see out there at practice. We talk a little bit about individual players and how they look. For you, going into this 3 weeks of OTAs, whatever imaginary checklist there is of things you'd like to see this team look like or players getting back on the field, that kind of thing, is there anything you haven't seen checked off yet that you'd like to?
Well, this is probably not a secret if you've been following the coverage everywhere on this. Tashawn Gibson looks like he has that range, looks like he has those ball instincts that you want from a free safety. It's out there. I think Todd Wash mentioned it last week, and so did Blake. Had an interception where he came across the field off the opposite hash and made an interception in the end zone. I don't know that he'll do that next year. I can't predict that. But I do know that it was a play unlike you've seen a whole lot from this team's safeties. So in the frame of reference of what you can see from an OTA, to see that certainly gives you hope that that guy is what they think he's going to be. And that's the sort of high traction impact improvement that would be really good for this defense.
Yeah, well,
we just haven't seen it. We just haven't seen that sort of interception, turning the ball over, instinct with the ball in the air. It just hasn't been there.
I think if you poll media members, that more people would say Tashawn Gibson is the most important pickup that they had this offseason, the best pick, however you want to phrase
sure.
it, right, because of the great need that they had and the ability that he brings.
And it was funny, he almost got overlooked. Maybe it was because of Malik. Maybe it was because in those weeks leading up to free agency, we all talked Weddle so much. And it was almost like Eric Weddle. And then on this show, we would say, oh, Tashawn Gibson, maybe. I mean, so it almost got overlooked because of the money or whatever. But, yeah, if that position, if he's what they think he can be, then I'm not going to say it's more important than Malik. If you're getting pressure on the quarterback, if you're impacting up front, that's really important. But it's important.
They're both right. They're both important. We can agree on that. And I do think it is. One guy got a $90 million contract, and he was, by many accounts,
his smile's bigger. I know that.
Free agency.
Malik's smile is bigger than Tashawn's.
I'd be pretty happy. Yeah. You know what? I don't know. I don't remember what Tashawn's total compensation is, but I'm sure it's
It was still many, but it wasn't many, many, many.
Right. So, I frankly don't care about my children's children's children. I care about my son. Maybe his kids, and that's it. I don't need to take care of six generations, John. I'd like to take care of two.
I care about me, and then
well, the kids somewhat.
Even that
maybe.
Next generation. I know Jake's not in state, so he's probably not listening. Me's pretty important to me.
All right. hey, a couple of things. One, we're just briefly mentioning with you before we came on about the Pro Football Focus ranking the rosters and everything, and Jeff and Dan were debating it towards the end of the drill this morning, and the surprise, and we understand the dynamic. They probably just go on their raw grade that they assign to a player and say, we'll take the five highest grades in the most recent season they had, I suppose. I find it hard to believe, though, that if you survey, you know, front office figures around the National Football League, that anybody would put Prince Amukamara currently in the top five players. That's not a knock on him, by the way. Jags are very happy to have him. Fans should be very happy to have him. He is an upgrade in quality, depth, and he will play a lot of football for this team this year. But he's not one of the five best guys on this roster.
Well, I'm assuming it shows you, and I don't know the dig-down details of exactly how Pro Football Focus does everything. But it strikes you that it does confirm something about Prince that everybody says, is that when he's on the field, he's really, really good. So it doesn't surprise you that he grades out high because he's an athletic, talented cover guy. The knock has always been that he's not on the field. But I'm with you. If this team and this front office is ranking their core important guys, Prince is not among the top five. So, and he's probably not going to start in those top two. I mean, I would think House and Ramsey will be on the field and not, and Prince will be in nickel. So it sounds like we're knocking Prince. We're not. It's just he's not one of their top five core guys. So to grade him as such, it shows you the flaw in the system. I'm sure there are positives to their system, but anytime you're grading outside without knowledge of what the team's trying to do, your grades are going to not be as accurate as they could.
John Osher,
which is what they have to do.
Jaguars.com, excuse me, John. Going back as well, question of the day today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. It's Randy Jordan's birthday. He infamously scored the first regular season touchdown in Jaguar history.
I don't know if that was infamous. It's a pretty good play.
I mean,
infamous.
Famously? I don't know. Yeah. He scored. I mean,
memorably.
Memorably. There you go.
Memorably, although often forgotten.
Is it often forgotten?
Yeah.
That would be very ironic if something was memorable yet all forgotten. I think a lot of Jaguar fans realize Randy Jordan scored the first touchdown. Regardless, what was your favorite memory covering the team back in 1995?
Of 95. Well, there were so many because Stevens Point was so memorable. Lagerman showing up 2 or 3 days late in protest to Coughlin was memorable for those of us who were there. I still vividly remember standing behind Coughlin after the Hall of Fame loss with the media crowding around and Tom talking intensely as he would after a regular season loss. And the importance of every game and everything because it was the first. All of those things were cool. As far as on-field memory, maybe Jimmy scoring three in Denver, the way he did it. The first win, obviously, when Desmond scored. And then the big play of that, because you just didn't know when they were going to win. You know, that was certainly memorable. There was Vaughn Dunbar having a huge game in Cleveland when they won against the Browns, and all of a sudden I think that made him 3-4 or 3-5. And you started thinking, you know, could this team actually do something? And they weren't good enough that year. The Lions kneeling down at the end of the game in 95 when they were down, I guess, 44-0. And Hollis kicking the field goal out here, which gave him momentum going into the next season. But probably the first win, I guess. I mean, that's the cliche answer. But
that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, that's reading you ask the question.
Overall, being around that and the history, it's sort of a cliche, but so many moments in that. There's so many really memorable moments for me in that first 5 years. But the first year, I was also learning the league. It was my first year covering it. So every cut-down date, I remember seeing when Scott Sisson walked out, for example, after cut-down day. And you realized Mike Hollis had made the team over Scott Sisson, which at the time was not really something people assumed would happen. So little moments like that, I know for me and Prisco, both covering the team, getting to know guys in that off season and being with them at training camp. And I remember seeing Pookie Floyd walk out, and Pookie had gone to Orange Park High School, and he was a defensive end, a great guy. I remember him walking out after he had been cut. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is real. You know, because I'd cover these guys, I'd cover college football, but then seeing the guys walk out after the expansion team had released them and thinking that a lot of these guys wouldn't play again.
Never play another snap.
Yeah, that was my first introduction to, okay, this is life that these guys are dealing with. And I know it's football, nobody feels sorry for these guys. But seeing those guys when they got released and realizing that this was the end of some of the dream, that's stuff I won't forget on a personal level that the fans don't see. But on the field, and here's a big picture memory, I think winning that first game is one you don't forget.
All right, quickly, this week's schedule is today, tomorrow, Thursday, Friday. Most people feel that Friday may be a rewarded day off.
Oh, boy, I hope not.
Right?
Because for me, I want four this
you,
week.
You want as many OTA days we found out as possible.
And I'm hoping I can talk Gus into scheduling a fifth on Wednesday. It would violate rules. But I say, let's go for it.
Why
give me
not,
five.
Right? They'll take away a mini camp next week, but it'll be worth
I
it
want
because
five.
These OTAs are that good.
One for the thumb this week.
Is there a weather contingency that you know of for tomorrow or what they're thinking of with the...
I
just push it back potentially to the afternoon, or could they move it to Wednesday?
I would guess they'd push it back. My thought is it's probably tough to reschedule the day, but I would guess they'd push it back. But
all right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. They're not open to the public anyway, so we can make up what happened out on the field, and nobody would know the difference.
One for the thumb.
Right now. One for the thumb, baby. We need five this week. Come on, NFL. All right, Johnny O. Thanks for stopping in. We'll see you later
guys.
This week.
Thanks.
There he goes, John Osier on Twitter, at John Osier. And, of course, read him on the digital pages of Jaguars.com. Coming up next, Hayes Carline, Florida Times Union, pops in with his thoughts on OTAs. It's straight ahead on Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you as we talk Jags every single day from 10 to noon right here in your flagship station for the Jacksonville Jaguars, 1010XL and 92.5 FM. And Tony, we always have Ryan O'Halloran on every week from the Florida Times Union. Less frequently, but no less impressive, Mr. Hayes Carline making an appearance in studio here with us at Everbank. What's up, Hayes? How are you?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. Glad to be here. Love the show. So it's
avid listener.
Yeah, avid listener.
We're avid readers of your coverage as well, and we just mutual admiration society. Is it as exciting as John Osier portrayed OTAs for you for the last two plus weeks?
Yeah,
now?
I mean, I just like it when they're out there. So even though, you know, you can't try and take too much away from it, it is good just to get a sense of what you're going to see. We do sort of get suckered into this every year, it seems.
Every year.
But they do look, I think, pretty good on defense, particularly when you consider, you know, no Jalen Ramsey, no Miles Jack yet. So I think, you know, the athleticism is encouraging. We'll have to see.
Is that what makes you just see guys' quickness?
Yeah.
That kind of thing that stands out?
Yeah, and the schematic differences, you know, while fairly minor and hard for like a novice like me to sort of spot, you can tell that guys were getting better breaks on the ball, making more plays on the ball. And when we talked to Todd Wash last week, you know, that was one of the things that he brought up, is that they're doing things a little differently now, and he thinks it's paying off. You know, my bet is it will continue to pay off, you know, into the regular season, because like we've talked about, you know, Bob Babich was a nice guy, but it won't be difficult for Todd Wash to be an upgrade at defensive coordinator.
Yeah, they always look good this time of the year, and I think it's really difficult to really remember what you're comparing it to last June.
Right?
Like you felt last June like, oh, this team looks pretty good, but how good do they really look? And I think it's hard to compare a year apart, especially when they're not wearing any pads or anything like that. But I do expect there to be a difference defensively just from an attitude standpoint, if nothing else, with Wash taking over. And it feels like that is kind of washing over this team here in the first 3 weeks of OTAs.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I mean, I just think you play the percentages, and not everything that they've done is going to hit. But to think that Malik Jackson, Amu Kamara, Ramsey, Jack, you know, Gibson, all these guys that they've added aren't going to be, that all of them aren't going to make a difference. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I mean, they may not all hit. They probably won't all hit. But if three of them hit, then the defense is going to look a lot better because there's only 11 spots on the field.
And then you add Dante Fowler to that. You add the return, hopefully, of Cinderic Marks to a healthy type season, and you're talking about five new starters, potentially really seven guys that you didn't have for very much of last season, if at all. So you know, the potential is there, but as we always point out, the other teams are working hard to get better as well,
right?
And you had a lot, you know, of ground to catch up.
Sure. And this vibe could feel a whole lot different at 4:30 on September 11th if Aaron Rodgers comes in here and puts up a 31-for-36, 320, four touchdowns, no picks.
You know what? If he does, it's not like he hasn't done it before.
Sure.
To probably a lot better defenses. You know
right.
what I mean? So I understand what it's going to be like at 4:30 if that happens on that day.
Yeah, that works both ways, though, where it's not like this is the first time the Jaguars defense has been torched by a quarterback at that level. We thought this kind of stuff was supposed to be going out the window at some point.
I understand, but I'm only saying, and I'm not trying to soften the blow of anything, I think, you know, you got to go into this thinking we can beat Green Bay. We can beat anybody. We have to approach it that way. The Jags have to approach it that way. As Tony and I have taken the stance that we look at them not coming off a 5-11 season. We look at them, they should have been coming off a 7 or 8 win season.
Sure, I agree.
You know, and so therefore the leap to contention or respectability shouldn't be as great this year.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, obviously, you know, you think about the Colts game in Indianapolis that should have been a victory. You know, they certainly had chances. The Tampa Bay game, you know, was one that, you know, I think they had in control. You know, the New York Jets game, you know, was another one. So, yeah, I do think, you know, that this team isn't probably as far away as 5-11 would lead you to believe. Still very young. And, you know, the thing that's going to be so compelling for me is, do they have to take baby steps to learn how to win? Or are they one of these teams that there is going to be enough young talent that all comes together at the same time that they can take a massive step? You know, and I think, because I do think they will take a step. You know, but how big of one, that's the big, you know, the major question going into the year.
Yeah, and for a team that, look, it felt like for the couple years before that, there was this idea of momentum going into the offseason based on December for this football team. They better hope that's a lie.
Yeah.
You know, based on the way they played football in December, especially those last couple weeks, hopefully that doesn't really exist in the National Football League. But they have had a really good offseason where they spent money in free agency. The draft feels like it was a really good draft. For this football team, there are still big question marks as far as how these things are going to work out. We mentioned all the new faces on defense. And I think the other big question mark is what's going to happen with this offensive line. And really, who are the five going to be? I think it's tough to even answer that definitively right now. But it feels like at least they kind of want it to be Beachum to be the left tackle at this point.
Yeah, and it's a huge gamble. I mean, I think the offensive line is the biggest concern on the team. I think the defense has had enough pieces added. You know, you'd like to see how they gel and how they play, you know, against Aaron Rodgers. But the offensive line, to me, really looks troubling. You know, I do think, you know, Beachum is who they'd like to be the week one guy. But it's like, look, I mean, he's not doing anything. And that, to me, that's not a position where you can be healthy for three practices coming off an ACL and then be out there protecting the franchise quarterback. You know, I don't know that he'll win that job as quickly as maybe some believe. I think he will eventually be the guy, but it might, you know, maybe it takes a couple of games or something like that for him to be up to speed.
And the thing is, during the season, you really don't have competitions that much for positions. You know what I mean? Because you're getting ready for the next opponent. But as to Tony's point, I think it's already in their mind that when he's physically ready, the way Gus put it to us the other day, we said, how long does he need to have a legit shot to compete to win that job? He goes, you know, we got the tape. Right. In other words, we know what he's capable of doing. So I think in their mind, they see Kelvin Beachum is this. Maybe he's our best left tackle. As soon as he's healthy, forget it. He's the guy, and we're just going to go from there.
Yeah. I mean, these guys tend to be more optimistic on this sort of stuff than maybe they should be. And maybe they'll be right. Maybe he'll, you know, be everything they hope he'll be as soon as he's cleared. But it just seems like, depending on how much camp he misses, you know, you'll need more time to get up to speed. And again, we're not talking about a total joke of a left tackle in Luke Jokel. I mean, he's not great, but I don't think he's, you know, one of the 10 worst in the league either. So, I mean, you know,
I'd like to see that list. Who is on the 10 worst left tackles in the league list, actually? You know, look, let's presume Beachum is starting at left tackle. Let's presume Jokel starting at left guard, which is not a lock, I understand. But for the sake of this conversation, guy coming off an ACL, guy who's never played that position in the pros next to a guy who's never played that position in the pros and Brandon Linder, a second-year guard, and now your right tackle, I think they feel fairly good about, but he's missing time now as well, Jeremy Parnell. So, you know, the cohesiveness and the chemistry we hear about how important it is for the offensive line, they're not going to have a whole lot of that practice time together as a five-man group.
Yeah, and again, I'm in the camp of Jokel will not be the left guard. But
see, I was too, and then I heard something that made me think that is not the case, because I don't think I look at Luchoko and I don't see a big bruising mauler type, you know, and I think that whether it's Bernardo or Linkenbach or one of these other guys, a vet who, you don't have to have big name guards, you know what I mean, as long as they can get the job done. Who do you think it would be?
Bernardo.
You do?
Yeah, is who I think it'll be, but I mean, I don't see it as a great fit for Luke Jokel at left guard, but, you know, certainly I could be wrong, and we'll see, but I think it'll be Bernardo at left guard. And I mean, the guy has played a lot of football. He started a lot of games at left guard, and you know, I mean, he just got kind of pushed out. Dallas invested so heavily in that offensive line. You know, I kind of think this is one where you look at it and say, well, he hasn't started a lot of games the last 2 years, but because of his situation, maybe that's not as big of a you know, red flag as maybe it might be.
Well, provided that they don't get, you know, Blake Bortles killed.
Right.
Okay. He's going to take his share of sacks regardless if they have the best offensive line in the league out there. The offense should still be better, you would think, right? Because you're adding Chris Ivory to the running game. You're the maturation of Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson, and Allen Hurns, and, you know, getting hopefully a healthy start to the season for Marquise Lee. Things like that. Second year Rashad Greene is not going to be, you know, spinning his head around trying to figure out things. Just the guys that they had coming back and the natural improvement for young players from year one to year two to year three should spell improvement.
Yeah, and Julius Thomas, too, I think is a guy that could have, you know, a huge impact in his second year. And, yeah, I mean, Rashad Greene is a guy that, you know, I forget. I mean, he was on IR, short-term IR last year. He missed half the year.
Right.
You know, so certainly he's done well as far as, you know, to have that sort of an obstacle his rookie year and still show what he can do. But, yeah, to me the key is A-Rob, Hurns, and Bortles. This needs to be an offense that just goes out there and says, you know, we're going to get up on you 14-0 and come try and catch us.
Right.
Yeah, and for an offense that going into this offseason, they're trying to find that level of consistency they need where we're not waiting for half of a game to watch this offense kind of get on track. I think that's where the offensive line comes into play. And we've watched some really good quarterbacks in this league. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, we mentioned earlier, he's coming here week one. You've watched him in his career last year specifically where it felt like it slipped a little bit. And I don't think it's because Rodgers slipped. I think the offensive line was terrible in Green Bay, and he didn't have Jordy Nelson. And the combination of those factors, even the greatest quarterback in this league potentially can look very, very average on a week-to-week basis, which is why the step up from the position guys that we're talking about is important. But I think it is crucial for this team to find some kind of combination on the offensive line that's going to work and stop getting Bortles hit 50 times a year. It just can't happen anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Blake's going to take some sacks that other guys don't because that's the beauty of his game, that you're willing to take that because of what kind of plays he can make, getting and escaping from pressure. But yeah, I think right now if you looked at it, I think the 2017 draft for this team is going to be loaded with offensive linemen. I think it's going to be an issue. They are really talented, you know, on the perimeter, and that will help. They've got two backs that should be able to get the job done as well. And, you know, and I think it'll help with Blake being in his third year. I mean, I think he'll be more, you know, judicious with, you know, the chances that he takes. But I don't think you're going to see this offensive line, you know, opening up holes consistently and turning away pass rushers consistently. I think it's going to be an issue. But look, I mean, every team in the NFL has a hole, and, you know, we believe the defense probably doesn't have as many now, but, you know, the offensive line certainly might now.
Yeah, and it, bottom line is the offense. Again, if Blake Bortles can stay healthy, took a major leap forward in terms of points scored per game, which is the bottom line what you're looking for. Yeah, you want to, you know, be able to dominate possession, all those things, and give your defense rest, but ultimately it's about how many points you score, how many points you allow. The offense, I still think, takes another step this year, maybe not as big as the one it took last year. And if that's the case with the defensive improvement, I think that's the reasons for hope there for this football team. Next week is minicamp, Tuesday and Wednesday open to the public. What should Jaguar fans expect to see? What's going to jump out to them? We've heard a lot about, you know, Dante Fowler Jr.'s athleticism and how that's been evident. What are the things you think will catch fans' eyes next week?
Yeah, I think Dante Fowler is going to be a headliner for sure. I mean, he's looked fantastic. You know, again, the pads aren't on, but just from what you can see, you know, it looks promising. But to see Fowler, Ramsey, and Jack, you know, whenever that happens, I'll probably have to wait until camp, not next week, but Jack will be out there. So that I'm intrigued to see that, you know, we haven't seen that.
Sure.
So that to me will add a lot of spice to next week. 'Cause I mean, you know, all the stuff that you've heard about Miles Jack in the hallway, it's going to be fun to finally, you know, see it for yourself.
Absolutely. All right, this is the toughest question, not the most important one necessarily, but the toughest one you'll answer today. Outside of the people in this room right now, who is Ryan O'Halloran's favorite member of the local media?
Wow. You mean besides Gene Furnett?
I thought that maybe that was too obvious.
No. I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm going to have to go with D, none of the above.
I was going to say, is it a 50-way tie for nobody? Yeah. Is that what it is?
I mean, he likes you guys.
Well, I don't even know if he likes us, but I figured you would have been polite enough to mention one of us, whereas we know he likes you, and that pretty much, if a boulder fell on this room right now, O'Halloran would be friendless.
I'm right, and you're wrong.
Could be hacker.
By the way, just a plug, he wrote a really good story on Jared Odrick today about all of Odrick's vacations this offseason. So some pretty cool pictures that Odrick provided, but a good story as well if you guys want to go to Jacksonville.com and check
it
out.
We always do, Hayes, and we invite folks to do that as well. That's the digital home, of course, of the Florida Times Union, where Hayes Carline and Ryan O'Halloran toil. You can also follow those guys on Twitter. Follow Hayes at Hayes Carline. HaysCarlyon. You already know that because you already follow him. But if you don't, go give him a follow and keep up with all the latest news up to the minute on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for stopping in, and we'll see you out there next week on the field, hopefully for minicamp weather permitting. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, coming back to Dayton football, the Honda drive around the NFL as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented all week long by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Hey, something actually happened on this date in football history, Tony, despite the fact that it is June 6th. By the way, D-Day remembrance, 72nd anniversary of D-Day. Those guys who, if you were 18 when you stormed the beach at Normandy, I want to say now you're like 90 years old today, if you were 18 then. I think that's, I was doing the math this morning in the car. I think that works out.
Yogi Berra was a gunner on a ship at D-Day. I'm not sure what other athletes may have been present on the actual day.
Let me tell you what, being a gunner on a ship is probably a lot more preferable than storming Omaha Beach.
I don't doubt it.
And they say Finding Private Ryan was just probably an accurate depiction of that, as you'll see, it was pretty gruesome and harrowing,
no
question about it. But on this date in 1966, something less gruesome and harrowing, it was the NFL and the AFL announcing their merger. I don't think that date can be right. 1966, how can that be right? They couldn't have announced their merger. Maybe it was they announced their plans to play a championship against each other.
Maybe
the date's wrong on that. Maybe my source is bad. Maybe I should have fact-checked this before we got into it. You know what? Maybe nothing happened on this date in football history, come to think of it, except for these famous birthdays, Tony. Bobby Mitchell, born on this date in football history, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He played with the Browns and the Redskins as a running back, primarily in the NFL. Four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro, also as a wide receiver. Hall of Fame inductee in 1983. He is 81 years old today. Bill Bates, former special teams coach here in Jacksonville, played 15 years for the Dallas Cowboys, and in 14 of those seasons played at least 14 games. Was a very durable guy, special teams standout as well. And according to the ever-reliable Wikipedia, so this is incorrect at all, I'm going to blame Wiki. Of course, we know he was an assistant on Nice's football team, which won the state championship, led by Tim Tebow in 2005, but currently an assistant coach for Ponte Vedra High School is what I'm to understand. I would put you in the spot or on the spot and being the high school guy and ask you, but I'm not going to do that. Do you know if that's a fact?
I do not, no.
All right, so we'll go with tentatively we think that's the case. 1970, Randy Jordan. Hey, this one we're pretty confident in. Randy Jordan turns 46 years old today, and as a running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, scored the first ever touchdown in Jaguar regular season history, a 71-yard catch and go back in 1995. Also born in this date, a guy we discussed a lot today. In 1989, Prince Amukamara came into the world, 27 years old. And in 1982, a guy that Prince Amukamara maybe matched up against at some point this season, DeAndre Hopkins. He turns 24 for the Houston Texans today. This date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They are not liable for the accuracy of any of my claims during the segment. However, located on Gate Parkway, if you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office, 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com and get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Yeah, talking about whenever the AFL and NFL merged, I was reading this weekend about the 63 AFL championship game when San Diego just pulverized the Patriots.
Remember it well.
With Sid Gilman as the head coach. And that was the year where San Diego and Gilman actually challenged the Chicago Bears who won the NFL championship game that year over the Giants, I think 14-10 was the final in that game, actually challenged them. That was a real wide-open offense. Lance Allworth was a part of that team. Ron Mix, a couple Hall of Famers, eventually were a part of that San Diego team, and there are still people in San Diego who actually claim that as a championship.
Interesting.
They said they would have beaten the Bears that year. The Denver Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib was shot in the lower leg early Sunday morning at a strip club in the Dallas area. Talib is reportedly not going to need surgery as the bullet went in and out of his leg without hitting any major arteries or ligaments. He will, however, probably miss minicamp next week is my guess. And he's not going to be able to make the trip to the White House to go visit with the president after the injury that he suffered. The Minnesota Vikings and safety Harrison Smith have agreed to a 5-year contract extension, potentially worth $51.25 million. The deal includes $10 million in a signing bonus, $15.27 million guaranteed, and it makes Smith the highest-paid safety in the National Football League, at least for now. The defendant who shot and killed former defensive end Will Smith of the Saints said that during the altercation, before any shots were fired, that Smith had hit him 2 or 3 times and then said that he was going back to his car to get his gun. That's what he said. Smith said the trial of Cardale Hayes is scheduled to begin in September. Will Smith was shot 8 times, 7 times in the back. His wife Raquel was shot twice in the legs.
I like to see people getting shot. Couple of things. One, I'm looking at history.com, another source, not the original source I had. And 1966, June the 6th, AFL and NFL announced that they will merge. There isn't anecdotal history, like if you weren't aware of what was going on in 1966, if you were born either shortly before or any time after that, aren't we led to believe that the Jets beating the Colts was the impetus behind the merger between the two leagues? Because the AFL finally showed that they are on a par with the National Football League.
That's
right?
That's the conversation.
That's the conversation, yeah. Right? And we know that nothing is as simple as that, and you and I have debunked that a little bit over the last couple of years whenever that subject has come up. But apparently in 1966 they announced that they would be merging eventually and that they would begin the Super Bowl, you know, following that season. And it just took a few more years before the official merger of the regular season schedules came into play. So I know everyone was really making sure that we got that accurate, and their whole day was going to be off. What about that you mentioned Aqib Talib won't be going to the White House? Brock Osweiler opted not to go as well. What are your thoughts on that? Like, I don't have a problem with it. Look, anyone's has a right to go or not go, and I'm sure it's an awkward situation.
Is he not going because he just doesn't want to be with those guys?
I mean, he just said I'm focusing on getting better with my team, and we're doing this here, and that's, you know, Malik Jackson's going, you know, pretty much every Denver Bronco who has left, with the exception of Osweiler, is going. So clearly to me, I think it's something that there's some uneasiness or bad feelings.
Yeah, Brock is probably still upset about the fact that Peyton Manning took over for him in week 17. After what Brock had done for that football team, at least in his own mind. I mean, he did beat the Patriots. I mean, he did that. He did beat the Patriots as the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos, so he's probably still upset about that, and then that they weren't willing to give up the couple more million dollars, whatever it was going to be, to make sure that they keep his services, and instead went back into the quarterback free agency pool with Mark Sanchez, and they draft Paxton Lynch at the end of the first round, and Brock probably feels disrespected. Now, if it's me, I'm still not passing up the opportunity to go celebrate a championship at the White House because I felt a little bit disrespected by this team. I'd still go do it, but I can understand why he's not.
Right, because you've got your Super Bowl ring. You can go get honored at the White House, and then you don't have to spend another moment with these guys ever again if you choose not to. But again, that's his prerogative.
You
I don't
can
think
make it awkward for all them, too.
I don't think it's a political statement. I don't even think most of those guys would care. Why would they care? They're not going to care. They're Super Bowl champs. You know what I mean?
Care.
I don't think that Von Miller is sitting there going, damn you, Brock Osweiler, how dare you leave. You know, all these guys, I think the players, for the most part, understand that it's a business, and Brock Osweiler capitalized when he had the opportunity to do that. Hey, Denver, you want me back? Pay me what Houston is willing to pay me. They're willing to pay me, you know, sight unseen based on a 7-game sample where I've never played for him. He didn't even meet Bill O'Brien when he signed on with the team in Houston. Maybe Denver just feels like, look, we've seen this guy throughout the entirety of his rookie contract. He's not worth that kind of money. That's their prerogative. But Elway was a little bit salty when he left, as if he should take the discount. Hey, John, you drafted me as maybe to be your quarterback of the future in the second round. Then you went out and got Peyton Manning and shoved me to the side. And I get it. It was the best for the franchise. You did what was best in your situation for you and the franchise and your job. I'm doing what's best for me. I don't have any issue with Brock Osweiler going. All right, we'll take a timeout here. If you want to get in, 641-1010. We'll check the text line coming back as well, which is driven by Duval Ford. Couple of things. Question of the day is out there, being that it is Randy Jordan's birthday, scorer of the first regular season touchdown in Jaguar franchise history. We ask you today, what's your favorite memory, if you're old enough to have one, of the 1995 inaugural Jaguar season? So we've got that coming up a little bit later on as well, and a little bit more on the Pro Football Focus ranking of all the rosters in the National Football League. Jags came in at 27th overall. We'll do that straight ahead. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Oh, nonstop. You know, the guy who gave me the most problems is probably Julius Thomas. Like, he wasn't paid, but at the end of the day, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, it's all love, man. That's the good thing about it. It's all genuine. There's no jealousy, so that's what I love about those guys.
Nah, Julius has his money. No need to be jealous for Julius Thomas, Tony. Are you kidding me? Good for Allen Hurns, man. Reiterating what we talked about a little bit last week, nobody's upset to see this guy get rewarded because you know he's a hard worker and he's super productive on the football field, and the Jags have plenty of cap space. So that's what he's doing right there, collecting his cash for the next 4 years from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and good for him. Here's a couple of quick thoughts from late last week on Allen Hurns. Hurns himself asked if the chip is still on his shoulder even after signing that contract extension.
Not at all. You know, that's going to always be with me. You know, like I said, anytime I step out on the field, and I'm not over-exaggerating, you know, I always think about the time where I didn't get drafted. You know, still today, it's going to always be with me. And no matter what, how much money I make, you know, that doesn't bring catches come this season. You know, I got to continue to put in the work and continue to show what I can do.
Obviously, the question was probably asked, does that remove the chip from your shoulder, right? Because the way he answered it, not at all, is...
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. You know, we had Hayes Carline in just a few minutes ago, and our John Osher was talking about, you know, he's already back on the field despite
right.
the surgery. And I think,
plays hurt.
Yeah, that's who he is. And I think that's part of the reason that you pay this guy, because there is no concern at this point that Allen Hurns isn't going to be Allen Hurns just because you gave him a little bit more money. And the fact that after the surgery he had, that he's willing to go back out there and he's getting reps already, because that's just his mental makeup. And I think there are guys who come in the league, you come in undrafted, even when you make it, you always feel like, I was undrafted, right? Like, I still have to earn this. And I think that Allen Hurns is a guy who's built that way. Gus Bradley, speaking after practice Friday too, also commented about the new contract for Allen Hurns.
I mean, what a great deal. I mean, he's exactly what we're all about. His work ethic, how he comes in. You know, we asked to be on a race to maturity, and handle himself more like a six-year veteran. He's done that. He's got the respect from the locker room, the coaching staff, and then his production. You know, so all of it. I'm really excited for him.
You know, Brent Martineau was out at the Jim Harbaugh satellite camp in Jacksonville last Friday. By the way, the interview he did with Harbaugh I thought was outstanding. Great work by Brent, and very interesting stuff that Harbaugh had to say as far as that went. You can find that on the 1010XL.com on-demand section, I'm sure. But also get a chance to speak with the offensive coordinator for the Michigan Wolverines. I don't know if every Jaguar fan realizes it, but certainly some realize it's where Jed Fish found his next employer, was Jim Harbaugh. He hired him up there to coach the Michigan Wolverines offense after he got fired here after a couple seasons with the Jaguars. And Jed Fish obviously coached Allen Hurns as well at the University of Miami. They had that connection, and he was asked to comment about Allen Hurns getting that new deal done.
Kind of funny. I saw it in the Twitter world when we landed, and I was just so happy for him, you know, being with him from 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, four amazing years with the kid, and he is just an amazing guy. And the one thing I know about him is that big salary and that big contract will make him work harder, because he that's what all he's ever going to do is work as hard as he possibly can.
Brent Martineau continuing to catch up with Jed Fish last week. Also asked him about signing with the Jags, the process for him signing with the Jags as an undrafted free agent.
Well, I think it was just one of those scenarios that as the draft board started unfolding and he didn't get picked, it was a very unique situation. I think we all thought he should. And, you know, all of us in the room, from Dave to Gus on down, that everyone felt that way. And it didn't happen, so we immediately started contacting his agent and him. And I had such a great relationship with him for those 2 years before, and as with Stephen Morris. So it was a chance to kind of reach back out to him and just let him know how much we love him. And the best transition for him would have been one that he didn't have to learn a new offense. And that was a chance for him to get there right away and start playing. And a lot of touchdowns later and a lot of catches. And so much fun to watch his development. I thought he had an amazing year last year. And Coach Sullivan and Coach Olson did an amazing job with him.
And one more from Jed Fish, talking about just overall watching from afar now as this young Jaguar offense develops.
Yeah, well, I think it was a lot of fun to watch it. I can tell you that watching Blake's development, watching obviously Denard, watching Allen Robinson, watching Allen Hurns, watching those guys, everybody. Unfortunate, but Brandon Linder got hurt last year. I would have loved to see how he did in year two. Luke Jokel back. But all those guys, there were so many young players that we had in their 14th season that watched them play year two, and really rooted hard for them, really wanted them to succeed, and so happy. I mean, I know Blake threw 35 touchdowns, and I think that's just phenomenal for a second-year player. Really excited about that.
Yeah, and we don't hear it in those clips right there, but Jed Fish singled out the job Greg Olson did as well as the offense coordinator, which I thought was just a classy thing to do. You know what I mean? I mean, Greg Olson didn't take his job. It was no longer his job. He got fired, and then the job was open, and Greg Olson got hired to do it. So it's not Greg Olson's fault that he's in Jacksonville as opposed to Jed Fish. I think Jaguar fans are obviously very happy with the step that the offense took. Maybe it would have been primed to take a step under Jed Fish as well, but I think the big point of contention we've been led to believe is that Jed Fish had so many different things he wanted to incorporate in the offense that it was almost too much for a young group, particularly a young quarterback, whereas Greg Olson was able to more hone in on the areas that he thought that Blake excelled at and rep those more heavily and even pare down the playbook to have a more explosive offense. And, you know, now you go into year three, you see the reporting from Ryan O'Halloran late in the week, Tony, that the Jags are going to go to a more of an up-tempo situation more frequently. We've asked that question, why haven't they done that? Well, part of it is if you go three and out, you're putting a defense back on the field that may be a little bit overwhelmed, and they probably had to hide their defense a little bit over the last couple of years. But clearly, when they've gone into late in the half situations, first or second half, and they've thrown caution to the wind a little bit, they've had some of their best offensive drives over the last two seasons in those scenarios.
No, they really have, and we'll see if they can continue to take those steps forward and find that level of consistency that they need. Look, they're not going to improve as much from 2015 to 2016 as they did 14 to 15. They'd be looking at one of the all-time offenses in the history of the league if they can improve by another touchdown this season. So I don't expect that, but can they improve by a field goal game? Maybe. And really the impact for this football team is going to come from if the defense can improve by 5 or 6 points per game. Well, now you're in a lot more of those football games than they were last year. And if your offense is getting 2 or 3 points better and your defense is 5 or 6 points better, you're making up a touchdown a game again. And we'll see if they can have that kind of difference this year on the roster.
I'd always rather have a touchdown. You know, Steve Spurrier used to say nothing wrong with like a one play 70-yard drive that results in you scoring a touchdown, right? So I get that. But there's something to be said for being more efficient on converting third downs, right, and extending drives, have longer, more time-consuming drives to give your defense a rest. Because even if you're settling for a field goal at the end of that drive, when the defense goes back on the field, instead of giving up an immediate matching score perhaps, maybe they're in better position to get the ball back for you without allowing anything. So, look, obviously, you want the most points you could possibly score, but it's the way the offense operates that I think will be a key feature to watch this year as well. Will they be able to maintain consistent drives early in the game? Will they get off to faster starts than they have in the past and not put their defense on the field so much in the first quarter and have that ripple effect go into the second half of games? A couple of quick things here. One on the text line, driven by Duval Ford Cabby, asking today, how many Jags do y'all think the team will get? How many? I'm not going to read this verbatim. He basically was asking, how many guys on the Jags do we think can get all-pro status this year? He thinks maybe three or four if you include the second and third team on it. I don't know. You know, I mean, first of all, you're fighting an uphill battle because it's perception. Allen Robinson, I think, has a better chance, for instance, to get Pro Bowl honors. It's tough to become an all-pro at wide receiver. It's tough to become an all-pro anywhere in the National Football League, but you've got to get almost some recognition before you take that next step, unless you absolutely come in and dominate the league right from the get-go. Khalil Mack was voted an all-pro at two different positions, at defensive end and linebacker. They're probably going to change the voting rules on that. But he had such a dominant season. You've got to, you know, without having a base of guys that you're used to voting for, a lot of it's name recognition. A lot of it, you know, is we're looking for this guy to take the next step. I think there are several Jaguars that could contend for that. But in the end, I really don't care how many guys get recognized as being all pros. I really don't care that much about how many guys get recognized as being Pro Bowlers, because there's such a political aspect to it and a fan base. How large is a fan base? Who's voting? All these kind of factors go into it. Wins. How many wins will they have this year? Will they contend in the AFC South, legitimately contend, and not because the division is depressed like it was last year?
Look, I think three Pro Bowlers would be a heck of a step forward for
right.
this
but
football team.
And he's talking all-pro.
Yeah, all-pro. That's
a big leap.
Yeah, that's not going to happen unless they had some kind of just out-of-nowhere unbelievable season. You're not going to see that kind of recognition for this team. But I think three Pro Bowlers could happen on this football team. Certainly Allen Robinson went last year, so he'll be in the crosshairs for that again. Blake Bortles, look, was second in the league in touchdown passes last year, so he may get some consideration this year if he can put up another season like that. And I think a lot of times it is that second season like that that really gets you that recognition, especially at a position that's as difficult as quarterback. And with it going back to AFC versus NFC, that may help some of these guys, because you're not going against the whole pool of the quarterbacks. You're going against the guys in your conference, so that may loosen it up a little bit for Blake Bortles and maybe one other guy. You know, who that is, I don't know, but one other guy has a really good year, whether it's Malik Jackson because of the money he got or something like that. I could see three Pro Bowlers on this team, but not a whole lot more than that unless they have just an outstanding season.
Right, and hey, look, let's hope
that's
they go
okay.
13-3 and
yeah.
they get seven
I would
Pro
love
Bowlers.
That.
That'd be fantastic.
I'd love to have a bunch of guys that can't go to the Pro Bowl
in the
because they're playing
right.
the next week.
But in the end, who wouldn't take 10-6 with no Pro Bowlers over 8-8 with three Pro Bowlers? I would think. I would
sure.
hope everyone universally would want that. A couple of things. We mentioned the story that the guys on the drill talked about this morning, and we've continued that conversation to some degree about Pro Football Focus ranking all 32 rosters. You can find the easiest way to find it is to go to ESPN's NFL tab, and it's, I still think, the top story on their NFL tab. Just came out this morning. Forget the top five players, which we focused on earlier. They listed Malik Jackson, Allen Robinson, Kelvin Beachum, Prince Amukamara, and Chris Ivory as the top five current Jaguars. We have big disputes with that list. Starters who should be upgraded. There's a secondary list on there. Every team has got a handful of them. Here are the ones they list for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Start with Paul Posluszny. What do you feel about that, him being included on that group?
I think Paul is still a solid NFL player. I don't know that Paul is as good as I think a lot of the fans around here think he is. I think he's a solid player, especially on first and second down, but they need to find a way to get him out of pass coverage, which they might have done with Miles Jack.
They may have done with Miles Jack, although there's some debate as to whether it be Posluszny or Telvin Smith being first off the field in some of those situations. But I'm with you. I don't feel like, man, Paul Posluszny's out there. Oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? We got to cover this guy up. Yes, he's been a liability in coverage at times, but he does bring a lot to the football field. And when I'm making a list of guys that need to be upgraded on this team, he wouldn't be where I would start. Now,
no.
Others include Jonathan Cyprian. I would agree with that, either through his own play or getting pushed out of that job, because what he's done up until this point hasn't lived up to his status as the first pick of the second round in the year he came out. Mackenzie Bernardo. We don't even know if he's a starter, but I guess they're looking at it as...
Or if Luke Jokel's an upgrade, if he is.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. Or who else may be an upgrade on this roster. I think they're looking at it like this guy's been pretty much a career backup, albeit on an offensive line that's regarded as the best in the National Football League, and he does have some starting experience.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. Left guard's a huge question mark for this football
team.
It's
a question mark. But then they list A.J. Cann. And I think, to me, okay, you're grading him based on a rookie season where he started some, and I think his upgrade is going to come from himself, right? He's going to be more comfortable. You're talking about a third-round pick. Third-round guards don't usually just come right in and dominate. You can find examples of ones who have, but I think you can find countless more examples of guys that didn't that still turned out to be very good football players in the National Football League. So I don't look at A.J. Cann as a big area of concern for me. How do you view him? I'm not saying he is like this guy that you have no questions about, move on to the next thing, but between Linder and Parnell, you know, physically, between those guys on the football field, I think those three guys will make for the best side of the Jaguars offensive line. I don't have any big concern. I'm not going to sit there going, oh my gosh, I hope AJ Cann doesn't blow it again and get Blake killed this week. I'm sure he'll give up some sacks. Everyone's going to give up some sacks. I think AJ Cann's going to be pretty good for this football team.
I think AJ's fine. I thought he was fine last year, and I think he'll be a little bit better than fine this year. I think there is something to the idea that his replacement to upgrade it is the guy that's moving to center. And again, look, the offensive line is in flux for this football team, where they are relying on a guy in his second year in A.J. Cann, despite the fact that he played okay last year, and Jeremy Parnell, who played well last year as well. They're moving Linder into center. We don't know who's playing left guard, and left tackle is a bit of a question mark right now, too. So can you look at the offensive line and say four positions on this line, you can ask some serious questions about what's going on with the Jaguars on the line? Yeah. And I think that if they're going to put the starters who should be upgraded, and they mention two offensive linemen out of those four, that's fine by me. I think Luke Jokel makes more sense, but they're assuming Kelvin Beachum is obviously the starter if they're going to put him as one of the five best players on this roster.
I think they're going to be right about that.
I do too. But look, are there questions about the offensive line? Sure. My biggest questions aren't going to be asked about A.J. Cann, though.
Here, and for instance, New England has the best roster according to Pro Football Focus. They still list four guys that need to be upgraded among starters. Shaq Mason, offensive lineman Shaq Mason, Brian Stork on the offensive line as well. Rob Ninkovich, who I think is a pretty good player and linebacker, and then LeGarrette Blount. Is LeGarrette Blount even really their starting running back? I would consider Deion Lewis their starting running back.
Probably, for now at least.
If he's healthy, at least. Green Bay's got five guys listed in that category.
Who's that little scat guy that was catching everything?
Deion Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah, before he got hurt last
year.
And he tore his ACL, but all indications are he's going to be ready for the start of the season. He was impossible to deal with last year. For a lot of teams, would he be an adequate starter? I don't think he would, because he's undersized, and the way a lot of teams run the football wouldn't suit what he does. But the way New England runs their offense, where they just get those guys in space and those little short passes are extended handoffs to get you away from the mess.
Kind of the Ninkovich thing, too. Yeah, maybe he's not a guy
maybe
who fits on a
team.
Lot of rosters,
right.
But Belichick, well, if the genius of Belichick is he finds guys and just plays them to their strengths. Guys aren't put in positions very often where they're having to overcome their weaknesses. They're just playing to their strengths with that New England team, and he's done it better than anybody else for the last 20 years in the league.
I'm just going through here. One other name that's caught me. The Steelers had the fourth-ranked roster. Bud Dupree was a guy we talked about a lot last year, as maybe if the Jags traded down, might be a target for them. He's listed as a starter who needs to be upgraded. Well, first of all, he's just assumed to be taking over the starting role basically for the first time. He's going into his second year.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Again, his upgrade should come internally. He should become a better player because of familiarity with the league, more repetition, all those things. So,
and if you're curious about where the Jags line up against the other teams in the division, Houston was 15. That was the highest ranked roster in the AFC South. Tennessee was 20th. The Jags at 27. The Indianapolis Colts at 28. So they think the Jags have the third-best roster in the division, but not ahead of Tennessee, ahead of the Indianapolis Colts.
Right, yeah. So, hey.
It's a little silly.
Whatever. Just play the games. Go win 10, and we'll shut up, all right? At least we won't shut up, but at least we'll talk better about the situation. Coming up next, Fan Feedback Spotlight. What do you remember from 95? What stands out as if you were of age, if you were cognizant of what was going on in 1995, what is your favorite memory from the Jags inaugural season? We did this in honor of Randy Jordan's birthday being today. 46 years young, the guy who scored the first regular season touchdown in Jacksonville Jaguar history. We'll take a look at that coming up next. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns4Jax.com is the website. Guns, the number 4, JAX.com. Or stop in and see those guys at South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Coach, I know you like competition. Competition breeds more success. Is there one particular year you think the competition is so good it's going to be hard to figure out who you keep?
Oh, yeah, this year it's going to be. We're going to have some really tough decisions as far as when it comes to the end of training camp, and that's a good thing. So, yes, we've been wanting competition throughout, and it's got to be real. I mean, you can have four guys at one position, but the players got to feel it. And I think this is the first year they're really feeling.
That's Gus Bradley responding to our own T-Wig last Friday out at Jaguar OTA practice.
Yeah, didn't completely answer the question, but did enough.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to have some tough decisions. We wanted to know where, Gus.
Which one specifically? Yeah, that's fine. You know, look, we all try to get the specific answers. They try to give as general answer as possible, and that's just the way it goes. And, look, we do feel, Tony, that there are certain groups, I think defensive line being one of them,
sure,
that good players will be cut loose and snatched up rather quickly elsewhere in the National Football League. At least that's how we feel. Maybe we'll be disabused of that notion when the Jags cut a bunch of players and they languish on the free agent wire for weeks and weeks. I don't know. But I think that is certainly one.
Disabused and languish in one sentence. You only get that here, folks.
Sorry. I know some words. That's just the way it is. This one on Twitter from at, let's see, Professor Floyd 88. Okay.
Okay.
He retweeted one from the Jags. The Jags were quoting Tashawn Gibson, talking about Jonathan Cyprien. And Gibson said, quote, he could be one of the better box safeties in the league, end quote. And so Jarrell asked, what are your thoughts on that? Well, A, my main thought is any starter is going to say that about any other prospective starter. You know what I mean? I mean, guys talk up their guys. You know what I mean? I'm sure last year, if you had asked, I don't know, Devon House, hey, is Sergio Brown going to have a good year? Absolutely. You know, he's working hard. He's doing all the right things. He's putting himself in position to make plays.
He's solid.
You know, these guys, maybe, look, Cyprien may be in position to finally use his talents to the best of his ability because he'll be used to his strengths more this year.
Yeah, look, I question the comment because I've watched Cyprien for the last couple of years struggle making the read in the run game too. You know, and
outright missing tackles.
I've seen him make big hits. You know, we've seen him do that too, and maybe not having the weight of kind of being last line of defense safety will take some of that off his mind, take some of that off his plate. We just talked about Rob Ninkovich and New England and how good a job Bill Belichick does of putting guys in position to succeed. They play to their strengths. Well, I think there are serious questions about what are the strengths of Jonathan Cyprien's game right now. And are his strengths actually strong enough to rely on them for this football team? And those are the answers that he's going to have to give early on in the 2016 season if he's going to stay on the field. Because I do think James Sample is capable of pushing him, not early for that job necessarily, but if Cyprien's not getting it done in this new role, which does feel like it should suit him so much more, then they're going to have to go to somebody else.
But again, bottom line for me is, what, any kind of quote like this that you hear about guys,
what
I take
it
with a major
teammates.
Grain of salt. Last year, Blake Bortles consistently talked about what a great job his offensive line was doing for him. It wasn't doing a great job for him, okay? But that's what you do as a leader and a team guy. You talk up your guys. Tony, by the way, I think you're doing a hell of a job.
Oh, thank you.
Here on the program.
What does he say behind the scenes?
Yes. All right. Let's look at the fan feedback spotlight. Give us some of the better ones, the ones that caught your eye, Tony, as we look back to the 95 season through the eyes of Jaguar fans.
From Stoff Prime, that first win against the Oilers. He says the tweet's coming from Partsow, Poland.
Yeah, he's in Poland today with his girl, and he's very happy to be Polish Jaguar for a day, I think.
Irish Jaguar following it up, seeing their uniforms for the first time and deciding they were going to be my team. From Kevin, beating Pittsburgh at home had to be my favorite, but walking in stadium that first game was cool too. From Duval Doom, will always be Desmond Howard scoring that touchdown to beat the Oilers. Stupid mayonnaise-loving Titans. From Brian, 5 rows from the field in the north end zone, Jaguars beat the Steelers hot October day. So worth it. From Cameron, Mike Hollis's game winner against the Browns, week 17. From BCB Couch, we got anyone who tells you anything other than the win versus Pittsburgh probably was too young to remember. From Jags Dog, we got just the fact that we had an inaugural season in our town is forever in the memory bank. From Black Dog, the flashcards to create the big picture in the stands, all the fans, one mind, one sound. And from Clay, all the excitement and anticipation leading up to the Oilers game, the Teal Raspberry Paw Trails on Bay Street.
All right, I just wanted to add one from the Facebook page. Skylar Lane said, being born the day before the first home game, if that counts as a memory, hashtag Jags fan for life. I'm sure you've been reminded, you know, I'm sure he's been, his family has, you know, chronicled what that time was like.
I'm sure.
It almost feels like a memory.
I can remember 95. I was 12 years old, whatever, 13 maybe during the season itself. But I can remember my parents went to the Steelers game, and my mom's side of the family is Steelers fans, right? And my grandfather was supposed to come down into town to go to the game with my mom. My dad had 2 tickets from work, whatever, and he couldn't make it. So my mom's dad, big Steelers fan, grew up in Altoona, Pennsylvania. So my dad is going in her father's place with my mother. And apparently, my mom did not appreciate the fact that my dad was pulling for the Jaguars during this game as a Steelers fan. So they beat the Steelers that day. My mom is furious, right? They come home. They both walk in the door. My mom picks up her keys, walks right back out. I look at Dad. I go, what'd you do? He says, I have no idea. I don't know why she's so upset. She didn't say a word all the way home in the car. I don't know what's going on. And she got home like half an hour later, just drove around in anger about the Jaguars winning that game and came in and just let him have it about sitting in her dad's seat and not cheering for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Hey,
it was fantastic.
The only thing I didn't like about your mom was that incident right there. All right, Mrs. Smith, let's straighten up.
She's coming around. She's coming around on the Jags.
Two decades later?
She's coming
around a little bit.
Yeah.
A smidge. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for joining us today. Of course, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Hayes Carline in on the Jaguar beat for the Florida Times Union. We appreciate him popping in on the program today as well. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Our Monday sponsor, always appreciate what those guys do for us as well. Midday Chalk is coming up, so stick around on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.